So the tonight's topic is, can I paskin from my smartphone, and can my smartphone be my rabbi? The questions I really want to uncover, discover, are what is goes into a rabbi's psak when somebody comes up with a halachic decision of psak. How do they come up with that? Is it what they're feeling? Is it based on their biases? Is it based on, all sort of subjective of things that are based on the questioner, the relationship between them? What goes into how a rabbi or a posek comes up with a decision about doing X, Y, and Z? And really, more importantly, is how does a person choose a rabbi that's correct for him to answer his questions? Or if, for that matter, if they're using a sefer, a book, or something online, how do they know where to go? If they see multiple opinions, what are they supposed to do? So I want to sort of go through the topic. First, talk about Elu ve'Elu, a very big topic, which is sometimes we like to say, everybody's right, anything works in Torah, and there are a lot of opinions. Anybody, if you take like a halacha test, asur, mutar, machloket, usually the right answer, multiple choice, those are going to be machloket. So I want to talk about, are all opinions right? And some are equal and some are more equal than others. Shalom Aleichem, Uncle Ezra. Is that the case that we're going to say that when it comes to halacha, basically, Elo ve'Elo, they're both valid opinions, but some are just a little better than others, but everything works. How is that going to fit into our equation? Okay? So I'm going to start with three specific questions. We'll dive into the topic of Elo ve'Elo. What does it mean all the answers are right? What does it mean? There's 70 answers, there's machloket about everything. And then we'll go into specifically, how does a rabbi come to a decision on a halachic matter? Is it based on, their whim? So I'll share my screen, we'll get started, and we'll think about a few questions. First thing is, Elu ve'Elu. I mentioned a story, I think first time that we did the Shirim, is about Rabba Bar Nachmeni and Bava Metzia Pei Vav, where it has, that one time in Shemayim, just reviewing the basic point just to bring out the question, in heaven, they were arguing about Safek Sarat. A question about halacha, about Sarat. And they didn't know what the answer was. Hashem said it was Tahor. The angel said Tameh. And they said, who's going to be the decider? Who's going to figure this one out? Hashem, the angels? I said, we have to ask a person. So they called up, phone a friend. They called up Rabbi Bar Nachmeni. They said, we can't talk to you. He's in this world. Olam Hazeh. We can't talk to him. So who's going to go to the Shliach? Who's going to be the messenger to carry the message from Rabbah in this world to the heavenly court? So they say, call the Malach HaMavet over. The Malach HaMavet escorted Rabbah Bar Nachmeni on his final journey. He killed him. He distracted him from his learning, so he killed him. And then he brought him to Olam HaBa, and they asked him, so what do you say? He says, oh, it's Tahor. And he says, oh, it's Ashrecha, how fortunate is Rabbah that the last words on his lips were Tahor. The question is, why do they need him to be, why do they need to ask Rabbah? And also, why do they need to kill him? And also, even further, is the Rambam follows the opinion that says Tameh? And Rabbi Yosef Karo asks, how could you possibly follow the opinion that says Tameh when Hashem said Tahor? And you know what? Even if you're not sure, because the angels argued with Hashem, but then they asked the one to decide to make the compromise, who they asked Rabbah, and Rabbah said Tameh. The Rabbah said Tahor. So had the Rambam paskin against that decision. Okay, so we brought that question up. Ultimately, the answer is going to lie in what we're going to talk about, Elu ve'Elu, but it's a lot more than that. That the keys to halacha are given over to the rabbis in this world. We're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. We're going to talk about Elu ve'Elu. So the Gemara tells us this concept. It says, once there were 3 years of machloka, and not just one, but hundreds of machloka between Bechama and Beit Hillel. The students of Bechama and Beit Hillel proliferated lots of Torah, but lots of machloka and a lot of disputes. And you know what? They didn't know what to do. It almost appeared like there were two Torahs in the world, the Beit Shammai Torah, the Beit Hillel Torah. What are they going to do? Halal Omer, Halacha Kamosinu, Halal Omer, Halacha Kamosinu. Everybody said, follow us! And they made a big poster, advertising the Beit Hillel, the right way to go. And then Beit Shammai, the smart way to do things, whatever. Everybody was voting for their opinion. Until the heavenly voice came out, Bakal Amra, Elu ve'Elu, they're both divine. Allah will get everybody help. Some, everybody's equal, some are more equal than others. So, but really, what does that mean? That they're both right, but we're going to follow Beit Hillel. The Gemara says, so my first question for the night is, what does that mean that there's an objective divine reality and there's truth to what Beit Shammai said, but we don't follow him? If anybody's ever heard, it's quoted in the Vilna Gaon, that the Gemara said, in the future, in the days of Mashiach, we're going to follow Beit Shammai. What's going on all of a sudden? Do we reject Beit Shammai? We never heard of him? Or is he saying a good idea? Why is it that we can follow halacha even if it's the other opinion's valid also? What is that? How does that work? And the Gemara says, you know who wins? Beit Hillel. Why? Why do they win? Says the Gemara, we don't understand it. They're both divine. Why do we follow them? Oh, they're very pleasant people. So you know what we should have said? They get the Midos Award. At the end of graduation, we'll give Beit Shammai the smart expert honors, roll of honors. We'll get the valedictorian. Beit Hillel will get the nice award. In camp, there's always somebody they have to give the nice kid award to. But really, so why is the halacha of Beit Hillel? Because they're nice. So a lot of questions we brought up already. Let me just summarize. Main question I want to focus on is, how can we follow halacha of one opinion if they're both right? What does that even mean? Any questions on what I said so far before I go on to my second question? Any extra questions? Any answers? Lidan, any solutions so far? Okay.
I'm still thinking about it.
Thinking. Okay, great.
If I have some, I'll let you know for sure.
Awesome. So here's the second question. It's one thing maybe if we're talking about law, halacha, to talk about they're both right. How does that make sense? We'll talk about, but maybe like you could discuss, you know, two lawyers arguing about a topic, they both can be bringing up valid points. There's a valid idea here, I can sort of get that. But what's more strange is as follows. Imagine that there was an argument between, let's say, Yehoshua and Khalid. What was the shirt that Moshe Rabbeinu was wearing when he came down from Har Sinai? Was it black or was it white? Yeshua says, I know it was white. And Khalid says, no, it was definitely black. You have a picture for us. Okay, I can't really see it on the screen so clear. Ah, so on the photographer is posaic. Okay, neither. Fine. Question is, would we say about that they're both right? What do we think? If there's argument about a reality, do we say that they're both right? Elo ve'elo, divra el kimchayim, they're both divine?
Good question.
Anybody think that doesn't make sense? Or thinks it makes sense?
I don't know. Maybe it makes sense. I don't know. Maybe okay. We're talking about different, different perspectives. Shirin, panim da Torah, you know?
Okay. So fine. So let's see over here. I have one source for you. That's not exactly that case, but it's slightly different. It tells us this story. I'm not getting into all the details, but it talks about the Pelegish Begiva and Shoftim. Very sad story that a guy had a Pelegish, a concubine, and one time they got in a fight, and one time the Pelegish was out on the street, and horrible, horrible things happened to her. And because of the atrocity, the people in Binyamin took revenge upon that town, on those people, and led to a full-out civil war in Klaizel. Many, many people died over this horrible act because of one fight in a couple. What was the fight? Because the Torah doesn't, the Navi doesn't tell you what started the story collection. It's a terrible story that talks about atrocities and immorality and things that are wrong. But what started it? What was the catalyst, the straw that broke the camel's back that started this horrible story that led to civil war? The Gemara says, well, we're not, it doesn't say. So we have two ideas. Rabbi Evyatar Omar Zvuv Matzala. Rabbi Evyatar says he found that there was a fly, whatever, either in his food or when they were together, whatever it is, bottom line, he found something displeasing. He found the fly that, basically there was it was too hot, not a good air conditioning. And then you have Rabbi Yonatan says, Nima Matala. He found that she had a hair. She didn't take a haircut recently. All right. She didn't shave. All right. So machlekes. Couples get into fights over lots of random things. So you have somebody said it was a fly that was in the house that was driving you crazy. Maybe he took a tennis racket, tried to swat the fly, and bam, she hit him in the head. And that led to the Civil War. All right, maybe. But question is, what's the right answer? Says the Gemara, Ashkar Rabbi Eviatar Eliyahu. These rabbis are arguing, and Rabbi Eviatar says, he met up with Eliyahu in the street, and he saw Eliyahu in heaven, and he said, Micah, Aviatar Kodesh Baruch Hu, please tell me, what's God doing at this moment? Hashem Almighty, what's he up to? I'm really asleep in Pelech Shegiva. You know what he's doing? He's learning the story of Pelech Shegiva. So Rabbi Eviatar says, come on, give me the good news. Tell me, what's going on? What is the Kodesh Baruch Hu saying is happening? Micah Amar, I'm really Eviatar Bnei Yom Rekach. My son Eviatar says this. Yonatan Bnei Yom Rekach. My son Yonatan says this. Rabbi Eviatar heard this and said, oh my, what is going on? How does that make any sense? Chas v'shalom. How can you say such a thing, Eliyahu? Mika sveka kam yishra. Hashem's not sure. Does that make sense? I was like, Eliyahu, Devar Kev Chaim, they're both right. Come on, I don't understand. Did he find a fly in the house? Or he found that she had hair? Which one? How could they both be right? Hashem recorded both in Shemayim? But like, if you took a video camera, Steven Spielberg, whatever, you find a good video of Shoftim, an exciting drama, terrible stories, okay, but probably rated R. What would they take the picture of? The fly or the hair? Which one's right? How could it be? And Hashem is saying that. So question number one is, what does that mean, they're both right, but we follow Halacha like Bidil, because he's nice? And second is, how does it make sense when we're talking about a question of reality? What happened? Was the shirt black or was the shirt white? You can also have a machloke. Okay, now here goes the third question. I'll get back. You know what? Okay, that's one thing. Those are the two main questions. I have a third one. The third one we'll get to later. I don't need to get to it right now. The third question is, if halacha is subjective, basically, people like to say this, that if there's a halachic will, then there must be a halachic way. Because just about any... And who, you know, let me ask that question. Who thinks that's right, that statement's correct or not? If there's a halachic will, there should be a halachic way. If you almost look into, let's say, Chaim Avadia's tshuva, he finds a cool love for many, many things. Who thinks that's true and who thinks that's not right?
I would disagree.
Why do you disagree? What do you think?
Because depending on based on what you said before that rabbis have this, some sort of like shkacha, I think that's what you said, and they connect the Torah in a certain way, and they have a certain leniency, but that's rooted within halacha. But then you have, but if you just want to say based on just on the person's will, you can just say I just want to do something today, and that's the guy goes completely against halacha. Obviously, that's not right.
Absolutely done. Okay, on the mark. So, we're going to talk about it. For those, this is not, it comes a very controversial question, which we brought up last time, about partnership minyans. If anybody heard about those, there was a long discussion about it. And one of the best articles written on the topic was a very lengthy essay. Now I'm just forgetting the names. By two brothers that were big, they knew a lot of Torah, and they wrote a very, very long article, 180 pages in tradition, and 120 of the pages were footnotes. And they went back and forth. They come out to saying that they shouldn't do partnership minyans with giving women aliyot. Now, the question is, it's hard sort of to dispute. Anybody else who wrote about the topic did not do as good a job in terms of sources. Chaim Avadia's best tshuvot are 500 sources. I think that they quoted 1,000, more than 1,000 sources. So who are you going to follow? Do you follow a posek who says, look, I have 1,000 sources? Or you say, look, he's a well-established rabbi? That's what I'm getting into a little bit. Okay, so now here's my piece on trying to answer the first two questions about Eila ve'Eila. And then we'll go back to the controversial stuff, partnership ends, and other controversial stuff about Agunos, the international Beis Din. And let me ask like this, about an international Beis Din. If you feel bad, a woman is an Aguna, she can't get remarried because the husband's a jerk. He doesn't want to give her a get for 10 years already. He's just causing her trouble. Do you see it? Do you try to sit there and say, can we find any lenient opinion to match with Aguna? And what if it's just a minority opinion no one's heard of? Do we do that? This came up a few years ago. A very big controversy in Reshefter, an international based in a very serious case. What do you say about that?
We cannot follow that. Depends really if it's your rabbi. If it's your rabbi, yes. If it's not your rabbi, no.
Okay, but maybe we should feel bad that she's been in Aguna for 10 years. We should feel bad.
Yeah, but also, it's in the Torah not to, so. Okay. How are we going to go? It doesn't matter the feeling. What did the Torah say?
Wow, okay, so fine. Any other thoughts before we dive into the approaches? Here we go. You can just unmute yourself and join in. So I have a big machlokin here between, on the one hand, Rav Schachter, on the other hand, Rav Meir Mazuz. And to the left is Rav Meir Mazuz, Tunisian, a big Talmud Chacham, and he has the Ish Matzliach. His father is Rav Matzliach Mazuz, killed by a terrorist in Israel, and he lives in Bnei Brak, and he has a yeshiva. And The one thing, anybody know what Rav Schachter and Rav Mazuz have in common? Well, Rav Mazuz is basically Haredi and he's Sephardi. Rav Schachter is more in the modern Orthodox camp and Ashkenazi. Anybody know what they have in common?
They're both Jewish.
Both Jewish. They both wear tchelos. All right. Anyway, question is like this. There's an awesome dispute between Rabbeinu Tam and Vilna Gaon about when is nighttime. Does nighttime start, let's just say 13 and a half minutes, for our purposes, 20 minutes, 25, 30 minutes after sunset, or is it 72 minutes, or a little bit later? Awesome machlokes, Rabbeinu Tam versus the Gra. And guess what? It's not one-on-one. Rabbeinu Tam was a Tosor, a grandson of Rashi. The Vilna Gaon was the 1700s, we talked about in the history. It's not that. It's over 80 Rishonim, all the Baalei Tosfot, and the Ramban, and Rashba, and Ritva, and Ibuki Yosef, and Meiri, and Hashlama, and maybe Rashi, and we can keep listing them, Meiri, and so on and so forth. Over 80 Rishonim. Rav Avadia is true, of course, 25. But after the academics are done with it, they found 80 Rishonim that sided with Rabbeinu Tam. And Shulchan Aruch followed Rabbeinu Tam. And the Gra in the 1700s came along and said, sorry, I don't like it, doesn't make sense to me. Undid the Gra, and he went and made a new approach that night falls much sooner. Anybody know how the halacha follows? What we do in the halacha? The main halacha, most mainstream places, is they keep Shabbat, whatever, 25, 30, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, but not 72. That's the mainstream halacha in most places. 80 Rishonim versus the Vilna Gaon. In the days of the Vilna Gaon, there was nobody else who said like him. And he was taking everybody on, but he said, look, I think I'm right. It came out afterwards. He didn't prove this. Afterwards, they showed from Tshuva Gaonim, from the Gaonim before the Rishonim, from the 500 to 1,000 from that time period, they found several Gaonim that had this opinion. And later, people speculate maybe it's also the Rambam, and maybe it's also a few other Rishonim. But still, it still is almost an 80 to 1 argument over here. You have a scale, 80 to 1, there's no question, 80 wins. In terms of Achronim, there are 186, I think, Achronim that side with Poskim, that side with Rabbeinu Tam. 186 versus 1. What do we get? The halakha still basically follows the Vilna Gaon today because that's the Minhag. It just shows you the power of Minhag. The second thing that we talked about is the power of Minhag of being Kovei of the halakha. Ibn Chum Avadi, in his earlier Chuvot, said we should be very careful following Rabbeinu Tam, and his later Chuvot says that halakha is like the Vilna Gaon. Okay, we should try to be strict, but that's the halacha is like the Vilna Gaon. Question is, now that we follow the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, could you use as a factor Rabbeinu Tam, like going into Shabbat? If someone is running late, could you do something like Dira Banan? If you're running late, could you get in a cab? Right after Shabbos starts, after sunset for the next like 60 minutes, because Rabbeinu Tam says anyway it's day for another hour. Could you use Rabbeinu Tam or not? Okay, well, but I thought we don't follow Vilna Gaon. I thought we don't follow the Rabbeinu Tam. Sadly, you said.
Does that depend on the situation?
Okay, I'm sure it definitely depends on the situation. Yeah. Okay, so here's the machloka. Rav Schechter says, look, if it's a machloka about the reality and one opinion's wrong, they're wrong! Forget it! Rabbeinu Tam is wrong, don't talk about it. It's not Torah anymore. It's a waste of time. Waste of time, chas v'shalom. It's not the right opinion. It's not even Torah to discuss, and therefore very charis opinion. 80 Rishonim, it's incorrect, and therefore it's about a reality, whether it's night or day, and we see the stars come out, obviously it's night. Rishonim says you cannot even include it into a safek. It's not, you can't be lenient on deraita, on derabanan, you can't use fake seiko, you can't use a double doubt, two seiko together. It doesn't count for a factor for anything. Ravadia classically a dozen times does do that. He says, come on, even though, we follow the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, but Rabbeinu Tam, Shulchan Aruch, let's include him, at least for a safek sveka, something, let's include him. Rabbi Mazu says, nope, we don't follow the Gra. We don't follow Rabbeinu Tam, you can't even include him for a factor. He's Sephardi, and he usually follows what Ravadia Yosef. Very strict opinions over here. This is another thing Rav Schechter, I guess, has in common with Rav Mazuz. But for different reasons. Rav Schechter's point is it comes from a Rashi. The Gemara says that there are two opinions, and it doesn't happen one page, it happens almost all the time. That somebody says something, and a Tana said something, and there's two opinions. What did he say? Did Rav Meir say X, or Rav Meir say Y? Rashi says about that, they can't both be right. You don't say Elu Be'elu. You say when they're both arguing about what makes sense, or what does the Torah mean, or what happened in a certain story, Elu Be'elu, both valid. But it can't be, Rav Meir talked out of both sides of his mouth, Mutar Asur. He said either Mutar Asur, one is right, one's wrong. The guy who didn't hear it, waxing his ears, didn't hear, he's wrong. There's nothing to talk about, not Elu Be'elu. So I'm just trying to show limits to Elu Be'elu. So then what about the Gemara I brought before, about the Pilegesh Begeva? So I have three approaches like this. What does it mean that they're both right? But yeah, we can follow the halacha. So the first approach is from the Chida. Rav Chaim David Azulai, 1700, Sephardi, he says like this. You can get truth even out of wrong opinions. The wrong opinion is not the halacha because it's wrong. But it's not so dead wrong that it's a waste of time. The Gemara has a Perek in Yevamot that's called Perek Beit Shammai. We learn many, many things from the wrong opinion, even though it's not correct, but it's something that we can learn from. If somebody is, you have a diver, and they go diving in the sea, and they're looking for a pearl, and instead they find a shell, it's not a waste of time what they did. It could be they found the shell, and underneath the shell, next time they're going to dive, they're going to go and find a gem. So, it says a story, and he's, look, this is what happened. Shimon Amsuni was the teacher of Rabbi Akiva, and he was Dorish, he was looking at every single et, the word et in Torah, and he said, oh, it's a reboot, add something. And he had Doresh, this one, and this one. And this is his magnum opus for 5,000 ets in the whole Torah. He has an explanation. He gets to one of them, and Hashem HaKachatir, and he says, oh, it doesn't make sense. And he threw the book in Gimni's eye, threw it out. And his student said, Rabbi, what are you doing? It's such a... You worked so hard on this. How could you throw it out? And he said, look, Hashem gave me a reward for the fact that I worked hard on trying to come up with this theory. And says, you're going to give me a reward for throwing it out. What do you mean, says the Chida? He's going to get a reward for trying? E for effort. Should get an F. And he failed. Says the Chida, no. From trying, you understand better, more accurately, and much more clearly what the truth is. That's the first approach. And second approach is like this. Even the opinions that are wrong, they're right in some alternate universe. in some one way or the other, even if they didn't happen the way we know it, they did happen in some way, he says in a ganuz way, in a hidden way. It's true also. And like just like the luchot that were broken, we're putting genizah, we're still holy. The Mishkan looked this way or looked that way. Both opinions could be right in some way. One of the opinions is the way it appeared, and one opinion is also correct, it's just not the way it appears to us. A very counterintuitive sort of approach, but I'll get to one thing that I think we'll clarify that later, okay? We'll come back to that. Any questions on these first two approaches before I get to my favorite approach, even though those are probably the more classic approaches. The second approach is probably the most classic, is that they're both right, just looking at different perspectives. Any questions on that?
So basically, let's say the machloket of the Rambam, I don't know which one also discusses about the shape of the menorah.
Rashi and Rambam. Was it at an angle? Was it curved? So that, what you would say like this, very excellent question. I think you would say, according to the Chida, one opinion is right, one opinion is wrong, but we learn from the wrong opinion is Torah also. Because we want to learn more accurately, better, why did he make the mistake? I'll learn accurately how to learn correctly. But fine, not that opinion. The second approach you had from Rav Hutner was that the opinion that is like the right opinion is just the opinion that's in practice the way we see it. But in truth, both of them are right. One of them just goes to Genizah. If someone made a menorah like this, it wouldn't be the way that Hashem wanted. It would be put in Genizah. But, I'm fine. No, sorry, I didn't say it right. It's not that Hashem doesn't want it that way. It would be, if you had a menorah like that, it would be true in a way. It wouldn't be true in our eyes. So we put in Genizah. But now that it doesn't have Kedusha. So in terms of the Pilevish Giva, just to say, in terms of that was easy, because the Gemara even later explains, it both could happen. Could be there was a fly in the house, and she was swatting the fly, and then her hair fell out, and whatever, he was bothered. Both of them could have happened at the same time. It's not, people get a couple scam fights over many things. It doesn't take only one thing to fight. But in terms of the menorah, the answer I think would be, the Rav Hunder's idea is a very complicated thing, but they're both right in some way, some aspect of it. Okay, let me get to Maharal. I'll get back to his opinion, and we'll answer your question a little bit better, maybe. According to the Rav Hutner, it's very hard to explain. I'll agree. The third approach is my favorite. I'm glad you want to say something. You want to add? Okay, so here's the third approach. It goes like this. Maybe there's no such thing as, I wouldn't say no such thing, but it doesn't matter what objectively Hashem had in mind when He gave us the Torah. Hashem gave us the Torah to interpret, and He gave us the Torah in each and every generation of the rabbis to understand what's the right thing. Whatever they're going to decide is actually correct. And in terms of Elu, they're both right because that's how Hashem gave us the Torah. With both options available to all the time to come. And there's a Ritva in Erevin that makes this very clear and beautiful. He says, when Moshe got the Torah and he asked him some questions, what's the halacha of using a microwave on Shabbat? So Hashem said, I'll give you 49 explanations why it's mutar, 49 reasons why it's asur. And he says, Moshe, so what's the answer? And Hashem said, that's up to you. That's a beautiful medrash that the Ritva brings from Balei Tosfos that's basically telling us they're both right because that's both what Hashem had in mind. What do we follow? The halacha has nothing to do with objective truth. Halacha has to do with the way we decide things. And now, let me explain, although this is about to become very controversial. If it goes by what we decide, so why don't we just say, well, it's Matra Daguna, she's been not married for 10 years, and we feel terrible for her. Why isn't it true, and Lidan's right, the halachic will does not make a halachic way, but why not? This is the question that the Ran asks. He says, in science, would you ever hear that a doctor says, I don't know what the actual answer, I don't know the cure to corona, I don't know the cure to cancer, I don't know the cure to this, but I feel terrible, and I really want this to work. I have a shot at the chak. Can I make up? You know, there's some minority opinion that somebody that wants, which doctor, once somebody said, like, you know, if I give them vitamin C, it'll solve the cancer. Let me try it. Let me do it.
Is that going to work just because it's a Shabbat attack? He needs it to work? Says the Ron, of course not. It's ludicrous. Science doesn't work that way. It depends on your whim. It doesn't go by Shabbat attack. You know, we're relying on minority opinion. Either the guy's going to get better, or it's going the medicine's not going to work. So says the Ron, it doesn't make sense. How can you say we could make up a halacha against what Hashem said? The guy's going to die if he doesn't. Says the Ron, the spiritual reality of, let's say, the Beit HaMikdash that's in Shemayim, everything that's spiritually connected to the world, when a person eats kosher, it gives Kedusha to their body. It adds Kedusha to Hashem's name, as we talked about last time. Says the Ron, even though when a person does, let's say, something that's wrong in objective terms, they should really be poisoned spiritually, but the mere fact that they follow the rabbis is enough of a cure, enough of a reason to get reward that it supplants everything else. Hashem will take care of altering and making the Torah a spiritual reality based on what the rabbis say. And therefore, it's not like the doctor with the medicine. It's Hashem is going to give us, it gives the rabbis the tools to say, Sadi goes there, Hashem HaKayim. Hashem says, if you're going to say that this is going to be Tahor, the guy on Shabbat that does it, and it's Mutar, he's not going to get punished for that. Even though I think it's wrong. That's the Chiddush HaRan, one of the Rishonim. Not Apikorsud, he's not going down the road of halachic will, he's saying, halacha that's understood by human beings, in fact, actually generates a new spiritual reality. So they're both right. Halacha is like one of them. Why are they both right? Because the Ritva said, Hashem and Shemayim told us both options. He left us open for us. Now, I want to bring out a few examples. I think it's just so beautiful. I'll do it without the screen. But the Chofetz Yair asks the same question. He says the same thing, that the world sort of changes spiritually whenever the rabbis make a decision. One story is like this, and I heard this from Rabbi Mansur, based on the Sama Rebbe. He says a great idea. Rabbi Akiva, in the end of Gemara Yevamot, it says like this. Rabbi Akiva was one time drowning. One time he was on a boat, and the boat had a shipwreck. There was a terrible storm, hurricane, and capsized the boat. And he fell into the ocean, and he was swimming. And thank God, he didn't drown. There was a board of wood, a plank of wood, that fell right next to him. And he grabbed a hold of the board of wood, daf shel sfina, ultimately, and every wave that came my way, Nineti lo rosho, he didn't drown because of each of the waves. He turned his head, the wave came, the wave went, and he totally was swept ashore, and he survived. Rabbi Gamaliel found him and said to Rabbi Akiva, how did you survive the shipwreck? You were 1,000 miles off from the coast. We thought for sure you were dead. He said, look, I had a miracle, amazing thing. There was a plank of wood that saved me. I mean, daf shel sfina, people may have the drasha, that's the daf yomi. I'm not going down that track. But Rabbi Akiva said, it was the daf, it was the plank of wood that saved me. He said, but what about the waves? Why didn't those drown you? He said, no, because I turned my head. Says Rabbi Gamaliel, says, oh, now I understand, Kamei Gedolim and Divrei Chachamim, how wise are the rabbis that they said, a husband who goes at sea and drowns at sea, Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, if there's an ocean where you can look at the horizon, you can't see the end of it. It's not like a pond where you can see the other end. And if a husband drowns over there, the wife is Chas V'Shalom Aguna. Unless you see that he drowned and died, you can't testify that his wife could get remarried. Why? Because it could be he floated ashore somewhere. If it's a pond, you know he drowned, so he drowned. But if it's an ocean, you don't know that. So Rabbi Gamaliel says, how wise are the rabbis that they said that the wife is an aguna? Because look, it happened that Rabbi Akiva survived. And we couldn't let his wife remarry. Question is, the Ein Yaakov says, why was that like, that was the first thing that he's thinking of. He just said, let's make a party! Hodu Lashem Ki Tov, you're alive! He's saying, how wise are the rabbis? And why wasn't, if that was like such a chidush, why wasn't that the first thing? Why is he interrogating him? How did you survive? And then he says that. So Rabbi Mansur said the following idea. He said, incredible. He said, if the rabbis would have ruled that a man that drowns at sea is actually, his wife is allowed to remarry, if the rabbis would have been posek that, they made the halakha that husband that drowns at sea is dead and his wife is allowed to remarry, Rabbi Akiva would never have an ace. He would have died. Rabbi Akiva would never have survived. Rabbi Gamaliel said, How do you survive, Rabbi Akiva? He says, oh, a miracle, incredible things happened. There was a plank, and the waves didn't drown me. He said, oh, how wise are the rabbis. What he meant is, I see the rabbis made a spiritual reality that made it possible for you to survive. The rabbi said, oh, is your wife allowed to remarry? He said, no, he might be alive. That's what gave the ability, says the Rebbe Mansour from the Sama Rebbe. That's what made it possible for Rabbi Akiva to survive. That was Rabbi Gamliel's statement. Rabbi Gamliel wasn't saying, oh, the rabbis are wise. He was saying, it was because of the miracle. And if it wouldn't be for those rabbis passing, he would have not come back. They say about Chaim Avadya, unfortunately got many, many agronomic questions after the Yom Kippur War. And many women came to him and cried with his wife in his house, and he was prosaic, trying to figure out if he could matter the agronomic with certain pieces of information, evidence, that the husband died. And it was over 2,000 cases, and he was prosaic on many, many of them, that she could get remarried. And Rabbi Yitzchak said, there was not one case in his lifetime that happened that he was posaic, that the woman could remarry and the husband appeared. And it has happened in history, unfortunately, that Chatzam Sofer has a story about him in the 1800s. When somebody went to war, they thought died, and he went to the Beit Din, Chatzam Sofer was posaic, she can get remarried, we're sure he's dead. And guess what, unfortunately, the guy came in a few years later, he appeared. And now, it's terrible. The children are mamzerim. And the Chatzam Sofer said, I'm not going to be judging Aguna cases anymore because I made the wrong mistake. Chaim Avadya had the Siyata Shema that his word was kept. There's more stories about that, but I'll save it for another. One story. Rav Yitzchak says that one time there was a case of an Aguna after Yom Kippur War that Chaim Avadya would not want to be matir. He said, the information was not good enough. He said, I can't be matir. Hopefully the husband will come. And it was a few months and nothing came. And then the Egyptians made a deal with Israel that they'll send back some of the prisoners of war. And they sent a list of the Israelis that were taken captive, and the wife went and checked with Chaim Avadya. Look, he's not one of the prisoners. Can you allow me to remarry? Look, you see, he wasn't taken prisoner in Egypt. And he said, no, maybe check. I have one of the surgeons check. Maybe the names are wrong. It wasn't wrong. They checked. Nothing worked. A few months later, Israel made a deal with Syria to get back the prisoners of war from the Israelis, from the Syrians. And the same thing happened. They went to Chaim Avadya and said, can you matir the woman already? The husband's on the list of prisoners. And he said, no, I can't be matir. Not enough information. Go check it out. Maybe they got the names wrong. They went, one of the soldiers went to go check and greet all the prisoners of war that came from Syria. And they were checking off a list, all the people. And after, there was somebody limping, that had limping and had one leg working. And he said, you're not on the list, who are you? I said, oh, he was the person that this woman that asked to Chaim Avadya to matir her. Because he did come back, and he wasn't on the list, it was a whole story. But that shows the Siyata Shemaya, the heavenly assistance Hashem gives a rabbi to make the right decision. Okay, now, those are the approaches to Elu V'Elu. One is that the opinions are the chidah. The opinion that's wrong is really wrong, but we learn from mistakes. And the second opinion was that there's two sides of an equation, two sides that are right. And the third approach is that there's truth that is generated by both opinions, because they're both what God said in the beginning. By Harsina, he said both opinions, but the halacha follows, and the Hashem is Hakela Gomer, Hashem follows Sadiq Gozer, Hashem Akayim, Hashem follows what the rabbis say, and that creates a new spiritual reality. In terms of the second approach, there's a lot of beautiful things. There's two ways of seeing everything. The Maharal says, Hashem gave us the Torah, all clutched at the same time, and everybody understood it differently, on purpose. Because you only can make a full, beautiful, you know, white light if you have all the colored light together. So we can only have one Torah if you have all the Jews together, all the Minhagim together, make up a full Torah, without which you can't have a full Torah. I'm going through, this is just the snippet version, just to get to the end of it. In terms of the styles of the poskim, how does a rabbi make a decision? So the Ramban says, everybody who knows Talmud knows the way things work is it's arguments. Nothing is clear. He says, I'm going to argue now, my whole book is a big argument on the Baal Amor. He said, but you know what? I admit full well that none of my proofs are foolproof. But guess what? I still believe them. Why? Because The power of an argument is what was most reasonable, what seems to be the truth. And that's the conviction that halacha has, a person who's in search of the right thing, even though it's not going to always be clear. And that's what makes it very ambiguous and vague, but you still have to try. The Sephardi approach in one line is that we look at all the poskim, we look at precedents, so we're a midget standing on the shoulders of giants, that's Chacham Avadia, and Ben Ish Chai and others. Ramosha is very much into, when a person wants to figure things out, he has to have a path. And now I want to get to the controversy. He has to have a path and a Sarah, an intellectual understanding of the Gemara very clearly. Now, I'll finish with this. Controversial topic. The partnership of Indian was one of them. In a book, Rabbi Aaron Feldman brought up this topic. He's the Rosh Hashiva near Israel. He is the Rosh Hashiva near Israel, and he spoke at the Aguda, and he spoke at the Shem Sass. He wrote the River Cattle and the Bird, a well-known speaker in Rosh Hashiva. He said, and he wrote a book a few years ago about a lot of controversial topics. One of them was about women, feminist halacha. Halacha that relates to feminist things. And he starts ripping on certain things, and he takes a big difficult approach, because he says, hey, look, the way we judge halacha has to have certain rules. There's precedent. We have to go with the Rishonim. You can't violate the Rishonim. And the Rishonim says, well, then we can't change that. And he said other things why the feminist halacha was not the approach he liked. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein wrote a book review of his Sefer. And then Rav Aaron Feldman wrote back to him in a very friendly manner. They both have letters back and forth. They're printed in Jewish Action to the spring 2010. And what they said is, when do you say you can argue with the Rishon? Rabbi Feldman said, we hardly ever do that. And Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein said, it's not always true that we can never. Rav Moshe Feinstein sometimes would argue and decide between Rishon. The Gra, as we talked about before, was 80-1, but it doesn't matter. Somewhat, to some degree, we follow the Vilna Gaon. That's one of Aaron Lichtenstein's proofs. But it doesn't mean, says Rav Aaron, that in practice we're going to uproot the Rishonim. It means Hashem gave us the Torah to figure out. It's up to us to understand it. It's our prerogative and our challenge to have to figure it out. But with Yerushalayim, figure out it seems to us to be the absolute truth in Hashem's eyes. And then Hashem will accept that and make a new spiritual reality based on that. But in practice, we don't uproot Rishonim very much at all. But that was a lot of controversy came out of that. Any questions? I don't want to get to everything at all. But hopefully I answer my questions. How does a rabbi posek? The answer is, there's a breakdown of the question that to try to use Yerushalayim to find search for the answer. And then they come out with whatever they think is the right thing. And Hashem will decide that it's right as long as they have Yerushalayim and come up with the right answer. So that's my approach. Any additions? Questions?
So basically, can I
pass
my Shaila with my phone?
Okay. So the answer to that question is, there's a difference between a live person.
I'm signing off, but okay. I just wanted to say it was very enjoyable.
Thank you, Aunt Shefra.
Okay. And you did a beautiful job this whole term.
Thank you so much.
I got a lot of new insights.
Thank you. For joining us for so many, all the times. Thank you.
Thank you.
The difference between the smartphone and the rabbi is that the smartphone can't have a search for truth. He can't know what's going to be the right answer. He can show you there's a machloket, but he can't tell you who's going to be your rabbi, the one to do it. So everybody should pick their own rabbi, should follow somebody and be consistent. Because that's the way of the Torah. And if the rabbi that they follow says X, they're not going to get punished or, you know, for five if that opinion, so to speak, wrong. Hashem follows the way of that opinion, that's a valid opinion. Elu ve'elu, they both have validity. So you can't follow a smartphone in the sense that if there's a machloket, you can't decide for yourself without fully understanding it properly. I don't know if that's clear.
No, of course. But let's say it's the rabbi that you're always passing. Like,
yes.
Let's say that the rabbi always passing, like,
then yes.
Then
yes. The smartphone, if the smartphone is just relating information, so it's just a messenger, so then yes. If that's the POSEC you usually follow, then yes, you can ask him from your smartphone. Those are not so much a psak, a shayla that's very weighty. Those are, a lot of times the Rosh Hashanah or Salvation would answer questions by saying, Mar Makom Milcha. I'm just telling you what it says in the books. Look, if he's just telling you what it says in the book, so it's the same thing, a smartphone as a human being. He just, supercomputer could be a very good posseg. The question is only when he has to decide something that's not clear. It's applied to life. And that's hard sometimes to do. And then you need a real person to size it up.
Mike, is it true to say that halacha is lo b'shamayim chi? It's decided on the ground by the people, the participants here.
Yes, very much. It's very much decided. And I was trying to discuss, how does that make any sense? And you know, there are different approaches. I got to three approaches, but yeah, we definitely assume that we go with the halacha that we're deciding now, that we decide on earth.